Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Allison Stewart. Let's talk bicycles. Whether you ride or not, you know a bike when you see one. It's a simple little thing, but there's a whole huge story behind it. A new exhaustively researched book called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle, shows that there's more than meets the eye when it comes to these ubiquitous two-wheeled human-powered machines. The author of that book is Jody Rosen, who's a cyclist himself, and he writes romantically on the subject. Here's a brief excerpt from the book. The bicycle's geometry pleases the eye, the sweep of the handlebars, the flow of the tubing, the spindly lacing of the spokes. Your bike might be standing still, resting jauntily on its kickstand, but its streamlined contours give it the look of a thing in motion. And yet for all that beauty that Rosen sees in bicycles, he knows they're not universally beloved by any stretch. They have been harbingers of gentrification, and the rubber and steel used to manufacture them has sometimes come via the colonialist exploitation of developing nations and the working poor who live there. The book doesn't shy away from any of that. Jody Rosen is a lover of all things bicycle, but before that, he's a fair-minded journalist. So here he is, Jody Rosen, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. His new book is called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. Jody, thanks so much for joining us on All of It.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Happy to be here.
So Jody, let's start with a broad brush. You say the word bicycle and it conjures up the image of, well, a bicycle. But what other cultural baggage or symbolic baggage comes up when we think about bikes? And where does that baggage come from?
Well, you know, I guess the thing to say here is that bikes have always, from the moment of their birth, they've been controversial. They've been flashpoints in culture wars, causes of great arguments, and also kind of an object that a lot of mythology has attached to. So, you know, one of the big points that I make in this book is just that today we think of the bicycle maybe as something old fashioned, quaint. It's this vestige of the Victorian world, but practically from the minute of its invention, it's been a kind of fire starter. And the debates that we see out on the streets today, or, you know, in our discussions of transportation policy, should bicycles have a right to the roads? Are roads made for automobiles and, you know, bikes have no place on them? What does it mean to live in a neighborhood where there's lots of bicycle infrastructure? These are arguments that date right back to the invention of the bicycle in 1817, the second decade of the 19th century.
What were they talking about? What were their complaints then in the early 19th century about bicycles? I mean, you said that they parallel the issues that people have with bikes now, but tell me a couple of those specific little controversies.
Well, for one thing, at the time that the bike arrived as the kind of fulfillment of an age-old dream, that is the search for a human-powered vehicle, a device that you could use to move swiftly across the land without having to have a draft animal, that is without hitching up a horse or a donkey or a dog to the front of a cart. So the bicycle, when it arrived, was by definition a threat to something like a horse, which after all was kind of the cornerstone of transportation systems at that time. Various individuals and institutions that were involved with the horse. I'm thinking of things like hackney carriage drivers, veterinarians, people who made horseshoes. Were against the bike from the start because it was viewed as a threat to their livelihoods, and of course there was the issue of, as I mentioned, the roads itself. Like, should this weird new vehicle have a place on the roads? The roads were thought to be where horses traveled. The sidewalks were thought to be a place where you went on foot. So this bicycle in 1817, it was called a running machine because it was a kind of a push bike that you scooted along the ground. It had no pedals. This thing was viewed as an illicit and illegitimate machine from the beginning. So the first kind of mini bicycle boom kicked off in 1819 in London, and shortly thereafter, bans were enacted. There were bans enacted in 1821 here in New York City. So it was very much a controversial vehicle that ran afoul of the authorities from the start.
Oh, it's so fascinating. The word mystery is in the subtitle of your book. What do you mean by mystery? And as you were researching this book, how did you approach that mystery? What were you hoping to solve? Or were you just looking to ruminate on the idea of the bicycle over the last couple hundred years?
I mean, I guess I would say I was looking to solve some mysteries, although I did do a lot of rumination, maybe too much rumination given the deadline that for my book, which I had to get extensions on a couple of times. But okay. I mean, I guess in that sense, it was really a personal investigation. You know, as a cyclist myself, you know, I've always marveled at how good I feel on a bike, at what a kind of wondrous machine it is, at the fact that it's such a simple machine with so few parts whose workings, whose, you know, mechanism is, you can kind of just take a look at it and figure out how it works. And yet, it works so very well. It feels so good to be on one. I'm the kind of person who, I don't really like to be off a bike. Now, you know, okay, I'm sitting here, I'm fine right now. I'm not on a bike. It's more comfortable to be sitting in a chair than sitting on a bike. But if I'm moving around in the city, if I'm going about my business, when I walk on foot, I kind of feel like I'm trying to like forge a river or, you know, walking through quicksand. It just doesn't feel right to me as someone who likes to travel and go about my business on a bike. So the mystery for me was kind of plumbing the depths of that conundrum. Why is it that the bike works so well? Why is it that it feels so good? What is it about this thing, which has this very simple machine that has allowed it to stick around for so long, even past the point where, you know, in some sense it should be obsolete because we have vehicles that move much faster and use much more sophisticated technology. Why is it that the bicycle is the means of the most popular means of transportation in the world? There are 1 billion cars in the world. There are 2 billion bicycles. Here we are in the 21st century, and still more people are traveling by bike than by any other means of transport.
That's incredible. You really hit the archives for this book, and I think you picked out a favorite newspaper clipping that you can read for us. Do you have that available? And can you set it up a little bit and then jump into it if you have it in front of you?
Yeah. I'll give you a little background on this. So yeah, there's a chapter in my book called Bicycle Mania, 1890s. And this is just a kind of anthology of excerpts from the popular press and from scholarly and medical journals in this period, because there was so much thinking and writing and arguing about bicycles. The backdrop to this is that 1885 was the year when the bicycle arrived in earnest, when after many decades of a kind of fitful stop-start experimentation by mechanics and inventors, we finally got the modern bicycle, the machine with two wheels of equal size, pneumatic rubber tires, a diamond-shaped frame, a rear-driven chain drive. That's the bicycle that we recognize today. So you know, every other bicycle ever since, it's just kind of a variation on that classic design that finally arrived at the very end of tail end of the 19th century. So in that period, suddenly you have this affordable, beautifully engineered vehicle, which is easy to operate and safe. And it really transforms cycling from a somewhat niche phenomenon into a mass one. So suddenly you have millions of people on bicycles, especially in cities in the United States and Western Europe, including crucially many people who previously had not had access to personal mobility, working class people who couldn't afford to travel by horse, and you know, most interestingly, women, including the so-called new woman, feminist suffragists, for whom the bicycle became a symbol of personal and collective emancipation and a tool of protest. So predictably, there was a tremendous backlash to the so-called bicycle mania, a kind of moral panic, the same kind of moral panic that greets new inventions and transformative technologies and new cultural phenomena through the ages. So if you think about the bicycle before the late 19th century was kind of like a hula hoop. After that point, it's more like, you know, the rock and roll or the internet. And the response was quite heated. So here's an example of some of the writing. This is a piece that was published in the Anacana Standard, a newspaper in Montana in 1897. It reads as follows. The Reverend Thomas B. Gregory of Chicago has made a violent attack upon the bicycle. The Reverend Mr. Gregory says the bicycle is a menace to the mind. It annihilates the reading habit. The reading rooms and libraries, as compared to what they used to be, are deserted. It is a menace to the health. It provokes heart disease, kidney affections, consumption, and all sorts of nervous disorders. It is a menace to the domestic virtues. It breaks up and destroys the home. The children are turned into the street or left at home to look out for themselves while father and mother go spinning. It is a menace to morality. It makes women immodest. And when a woman throws off the beautiful reserve which the Almighty has placed around her, she stands on dangerous ground. There's no telling what a woman will do after she has lost her womanliness. The bicycle opens the way for everlasting ruin to a multitude of young men and women who might otherwise escape.
Jody, that's hilarious. It's hilarious. Yeah. It's like ridiculous from our ears today.
It is ridiculous and by the way, that's just the clean stuff. I could have gotten into some other excerpts which are get into some more sexy material, but it does seem outrageous to us. But I'll add that the kind of rhetoric around the bicycle, reactions to it, the rhetoric around it, both pro and con, has always been pretty bombastic, and that continues to this day. So even among bicycle boosters, you know, there's these claims made today that the bicycle is a kind of almost like a messianic device, this redemptive machine that can save the world in an age of climate change. And I certainly don't want to downplay the benefits of riding a bicycle and how great and sustainable they are and how good they are for cities. And I'm all for clearing cars off the streets and turning all cities into bicycling cities. But one thing I tried to do in this book was take a slightly more skeptical look at some of this rhetoric that is swirled around the bike and to look at a fuller picture of what the bicycle is as a real thing in the world, as a product of industrial capitalism, sure, et cetera.
We got to go in a moment, Jody, but I was hoping you can kind of give a sense of what the issues people have with bicycles today in New York City. What are the flashpoints? What are the complaints? What are the controversies?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure many WNYC listeners will be familiar with these because they're much discussed, I know, even on your air. But of course, there's mm-hmm. the issues of congestion pricing, of bicycle lanes, where they should be or shouldn't be, and the ongoing question of safe streets. You know, it is it's not very safe to ride a bicycle in New York City. That's a shame because we need more of them. We need more of them because they're good for public health, they're good for the health of individuals, and they're good for the collective health, for the environment. They make the city easier to navigate. They make the city more fun place to be in. So these are issues really are, again, they kind of recapitulate the stories that date all the way back to the very, very beginning of the bicycle. But I mean, I think the biggest thing I'd say about bicycles in New York today is there's more and more cyclists now than there ever have been, or at least more than there have been in the last 120 years. So I think New York's future, like the future of many cities, is in many ways predicated on bicycles. We need more of these things to have a city in which we can continue to live happily. And hopefully New York will follow the lead of cities like Paris, which seized the opportunity during the pandemic to impose a lot more bicycle infrastructure on the city and clear out, for instance, parking in the streets, free parking in the streets, which clutters up our streets and makes it harder and less safe to ride bikes around.
I've been speaking with Jody Rosen, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. His new book is called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. Jody, thanks so much for joining us. See you out there on the bike lanes.
Thanks. I'll see you there.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.